FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It is December 27th, 2016. Only 4 days left to this wonderful, surprising, fun-filled year. Are you ready for 2017? Well, before you move on to 2017, maybe it would be a good idea if you learned the lessons of 2016, if you can, if we can identify them, and then perhaps you can move on to 2017 a little bit more enlightened and a little bit more ready to really capitalize upon the opportunities that you will no doubt be facing. And I think one of the people who's most tuned in, who's been really with it, is our good friend Jordan Goodman from MoneyAnswers.com. Jordan, happy holidays and best wishes to you for the coming year.
Happy holidays to you and all the Financial Survival Network members. It's been quite a dramatic year. Next week's going to be more dramatic, but hopefully there's a lot of things we could have learned from this dramatic year we've had.
Yeah, well, happy Kwanzaa, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Festivus for the rest of us and all of that. And yeah, so looking back on this year, so this is the year of really black swans. I mean, yes. Trump is the ultimate black swan. I saw him coming, and I knew for months, almost from the day that he announced his candidacy that he was going to win. I knew it when I saw him in Las Vegas at Freedom Fest. He was going to win. The only reason why I didn't know when he went down the escalator was I didn't know if it was a gag or if he was really serious about running. But once I saw him at Freedom Fest in Vegas, I knew he was serious about running, and I knew he was going to win because this was the time for the outsider, insurgent, effectively third-party candidate taking over the Republican Party. And that's exactly what happened.
Correct. And I think one of the lessons to learn from this year is that the pundits are wrong, like a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, they all the way, even after he won in the Republican nomination and the day before the election, they thought he was going to lose.
The day of.
Totally out of touch.
Hey,
totally out of touch.
What about
the same thing happened earlier this year with Brexit?
Yeah.
People did not think that the British would vote to leave the European Union. And they did, 52-48. I'll give you some other ones. At the beginning of the year, remember the stock market was falling very sharply in January and February.
Uh-huh.
And they said, absolutely, it's going to be a terrible year. The market's going to keep falling. When it goes down at the beginning of the year, it's going to end the year lower. The Dow ended up about 14%. I mean, it went up dramatically since the election. All-time record highs near 20,000. So a complete reversal on that. The other thing they said, I mean, had I told you a year ago that the Fed was going to raise rates once and then say they're going to raise rates three times in 2017, how would the stock market do? They said, oh my God, the stock market would be plunging on something like that. And that's exactly what happened, and the stock market surged. Okay, so what we're learning is the pundits, you can talk to them, hear them all day, but often they're exactly the opposite of what happens.
Yeah, well, I would say, though, that the pundits, even after Trump had won the election, they still didn't believe it. You know,
right.
They were in complete denial. I wouldn't be so fast to say that they're going to be wrong on the stock market. Three slips and a stumble, you know, but I'm not convinced that the Fed is going to raise rates three more times in 2017. The dollar's strength, unless something happens to the dollar, this is going to be cataclysmic. Jordan,
it's already happening. I mean, the dollar's been hitting 14, 15-year highs. As our rates keep rising and other rates around the world are either falling or relatively, you know, stable at low rates, Japan, Europe, China, other places, our dollar's going to keep going up for financial reasons that we just talked about, but also for political reasons, because we're going to be seen as real, and we already are, and we'll be even more seen as a safe haven for people to invest around the world. So you're seeing not only people putting money into the stock and bond market, but real estate, big time, all over the place. You're seeing Chinese and Brazilians and South Africans and Germans and everybody wanting to get in the air, pushing up our real estate prices. And all of this makes the dollar go up. So if you have money, and you're going overseas and you want to go to Europe or England or, you know, it's great because your dollar buys more stuff. But if you're trying to export American goods, it's very, very difficult. And so that's, but I don't think that anything can be stopped. Even Trump couldn't stop that. He thinks it's a good thing, actually.
The strong dollar policy. Well, yeah. During Reagan, we had a strong dollar policy and, you know, the economy boomed. But, you know, Jordan, I'm looking at the Aussie dollar. It broke 72 cents last week. Yep. I'm looking at the loonie, you know, the Canadian dollar. It broke 74 cents last week. I'm looking at the euro. It rebounded a little. It's heading back up to 105. I mean, and then you've got like trade tensions between the U.S. and China. We're heading to 7 yuan to the dollar. I mean, these are all really, really bad trends. Not just for U.S. exports.
These countries want to do this. They're trying to depreciate their currencies.
I know.
Give them trading leverage. Japan is probably the biggest example.
I get it. It's 117 yen to the dollar. I mean, these are this, and then God, India. We won't even talk about India's currency. I mean, the rupee, it's going to cease to exist soon. I think they'll have to dollarize India.
They're trying to do this. This is a concerted policy.
This is bad, though.
It's called race to the bottom, right?
And it's a bad thing.
One left.
It's not a recipe for success. It's not a strategy to make your country great again. And a strong dollar doesn't mean a rapidly appreciating dollar. That's not good. It really destabilizes the international financial system and further causes the dollar to appreciate. And yeah, it's great, man. Hey, like you and I should meet in London and have a lot of fun because the pound
got about 30%.
Yeah, the pound is in the dumps here. Like I've never seen it. I don't remember the pound. It's never been this low in my lifetime, I don't believe.
And the euro, I think it's going to hit parity. I mean, it's at 103, 104. It's going to hit parity probably in 2017, if not go below that.
Yeah, forget it.
It's because Mario Draghi says we want to bring the euro down.
Yeah, well, there he's doing yeoman's work here. Right. So
it's Japanese. Kuroda, head of the Japanese Central Bank, says we want to bring the yen down to make ourselves competitive. So, I mean, I don't think there's anything Trump can do about it particularly, but it's going to be bad for U.S. manufacturers. I agree completely.
So do trends continue at this? Do trends keep going this way?
It accelerates, actually.
Really? So this is destabilizing for the world, though, because the U.S., I mean, Boeing, largest exporter in the country, how are they going to sell airplanes? And the other thing that's happening with airplane sales is that the demand is crashing out there because these countries can't afford to subsidize their airlines anymore. So they can't buy these state-of-the-art planes, which is so wonderful. I mean, I love flying in new planes. Don't get me wrong. Flew to China in a brand new 777-300ER on China East Airlines. The thing was gorgeous. It was spotless, so comfortable and nice. But, you know, how do you keep doing this? Jordan. Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't work.
Iran just ordered $17 billion worth of airplanes, so somebody's buying them out there.
Yeah.
What could be a major turn for the world economy, we'll see if it happens, is if commodities start rising. They've been falling for quite a while, and they've definitely been rising lately. You know, copper, oil, which bottomed at about 35, is now in the mid-50s. You know, gold hasn't gone up, but a lot of other commodities have started to bottom and move up. That is the key to all these economies we've talked about. Canada, Australia, Chile, South Africa, all these places are commodity dependent. And one of the things that's been so hard for them and their currencies is with commodities falling, their exports are really getting hurt. And, you know, it makes it hard for them. So if that could turn around, and the reason commodities were falling is so much less demand from China.
Yeah.
Now, I think China is not going to have big demand. It's going to be contracting to some extent. But if the U.S. can accelerate, for example, the $1 trillion roughly infrastructure program could use a lot of commodities. And if we start generating, we could become the locomotive of the world. If we're growing from 2% growth now to 5% growth, something like that, which is possible.
You believe it? You believe that?
I do. I really do. Because I think the animal spirits have let loose, and that will bring commodity prices back up, more demand for them. Which could help a lot of these countries we talked about. That is a potential surprise because I think when you get tax rates down, you get people incentivized to invest, to start new businesses, to expand. If they're going to cut the corporate rate from 35% to 15%, people get to keep a lot more of their profits.
You really drunk the Kool-Aid here, Jordan.
Yeah.
Well, you drunk the Trumpian Kool-Aid, the recipe, the special recipe.
This is not just Trump. This has happened several times before. I mean, let's just do brief history on tax cuts. Kennedy cut tax cuts in 1962, at the time from 91% to 70%. But that made the economy boom in the 60s. Mm-hmm. Reagan cut rates in the early 80s, 20 million jobs created in the boom of the 1980s. Clinton cut taxes in 1997, along with Newt Gingrich and the Republicans, cut capital gains at the time from 28 to 20. That caused the internet boom and everything that happened late 1990s. And then Bush cut rates in 2003, and that caused the boom through 2007, basically. So there's four times where tax rates have come down, and it's helped stimulate the economy. And I think, and then, so you're having that supply side effect. And then also you're going to have cuts in regulations, which I think will free the economy in all kinds of ways. On top of which, you're going to have a Keynesian stimulus of the infrastructure program. Now, I don't know how much it's going to be. He's talking about $1 trillion, but even if it's $500 billion, that is a lot of jobs, a lot of commodities, engineering, a lot of construction. I think we're going to run out of workers, Kerry.
Sounds inflationary as hell to me, Jordan, doesn't it?
Well, it could be, but we need more inflation. Everybody says we haven't had enough inflation, but I'm saying that could create the inflation, the demand, which could turn around commodity prices, which would help all these countries, which have been hurt so badly by deflation and commodity prices.
Yeah, well, the U.S., I mean, we do have inflation. It's not in the stuff that you want. It's on the stuff that you need. We've had this discussion before. Like, when was the last time you saw deflation in your insurance premium, in your
healthcare,
tuition, healthcare, you know, all that stuff? So,
but we've had deflation in commodities.
Yes.
And that's really, I mean,
but that's normal.
When oil goes down to the 30s, you know, you were wiping out eight states, North Dakota, Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, that were very oil dependent. They've come back now to some extent. Yeah. The oil rig count has actually been rising again. And if you free, just talk about oil for a minute, if you free the oil and gas industry to explore more because you won't have as many environmental rules, Rick Perry running energy and the Oklahoma guy running.
He wanted to close the Department of Energy down, and now he's running it. I mean, what the heck here? Come on.
Well, he won't close it down, but he's going to make it a lot easier to drill for oil and gas. Let's put it that way.
You mean you just like put your easy pass in at the Department of Energy and you get a drilling permit? Is it going to be that easy?
Pretty easy. They're going to, it's going to be complete reversal of everything we've done the last 8 years.
And Rex Tillerson is the Secretary of State, but he's still a major guy in the cabinet. So you got to believe, there's a question on energy, and they say, hey, what does Rex think? Maybe Rex knows a little something about this area. He kind of knows something about energy. Like, let's see what Rex has to say.
Absolutely.
Right. So they're going to be asking him.
Major producer of jobs in the U.S., high paid, high benefit jobs in the oil.
You know what else it means? It also means that the price of oil is going to hit the skids here within 2-3 years. Correct. It's going to go to 20 something, 30 something a barrel because we got too much of the stuff anyway, which actually low energy prices really is great for industry because that encourages industries to move to the U.S. that are energy intensive, like aluminum producers, steel producers, glass manufacturers. I could go down a list of energy intensive manufacturers.
If we have lower gas prices and lower natural gas prices and oil prices, that also puts money in consumers' pockets.
Oh, God,
make us energy independent, and we don't have to be reliant on crazy Venezuela and Nigeria and Iran and all these places that don't like us.
It keeps life interesting. You know, it definitely keeps life interesting being dependent on those people like Venezuela. Because I was just in Cuba, and they're cutting back on the oil that they're sending to Cuba, Venezuela. And so as a result, like the stalwart of the world is the American tourist. And the tourist boom, like assuming that the trends that you're saying, if we can just extrapolate, and it's dangerous when you extrapolate, because you know there's always things that you just never know what's going to happen here, right? I mean, heck, a lot of things can go wrong, but a trend in motion continues in motion until it stops. So we look at at the trend of low energy prices and the ugly American reconquers the tourist world, right?
So with that strong dollar, they're going to be traveling a lot. They're going to have a great time.
Oh, for sure. I mean, hey, for $1.22 to a pound in London, it almost becomes affordable to an American, you know? I mean, and if you stay in an Airbnb and you cook your own meals and go out for one good meal a day, I mean, right? Yeah. You can really...
I'm just saying that the world needs an economic locomotive right now. We haven't had one. It was China, and the last 3 years, they've basically been slowing down a lot. And the United States, I think, is going to become the economic locomotive of the world, which will help worldwide economy. All these central bankers say we want inflation. Japan has been trying to create inflation for 25 years and has not been able to do so.
Well, if it's one thing our central bank knows how to do is create inflation, and then your investment alternatives become really simple, because then you go back to Will Rogers, who said, invest in inflation. It's the only thing going up. Right?
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. Although gold has not done well since the election. And normally, if that was the consensus, you'd think it would have. But I think we're going to get economic growth.
That's a cyclical thing.
Hyperinflation.
Yeah. We predicted with a number of our guests, experts in the cycles, that gold peaked intermediate term in July. It was going to take a hit by the end of the year, and come second quarter of 2017 through 2018, it's headed way, way up. We'll see how that goes. This whole Trumpian economics is inflationary by its very nature on so many different levels here, Jordan.
Right.
You know,
I'm saying that's not such a bad thing.
Yeah.
Deflation is scary. I mean, you've been in Japan for 25 years.
Especially if you're a bankster.
Get out of deflationary spiral, which is what they've been in.
Hey, if you're a banker, deflation is a near-death experience, right? I mean, the money supply goes down and your bank ceases to exist, right?
There's no velocity in money, and then loans go bad.
Yeah. Too. Oh, yeah. which they're expert at bad loans. I mean, that's what they specialize in.
All the energy loans they've had, that's been the biggest source of concerns.
Yeah.
Huge. So if you could turn things on. Now, you're right, it's going to be interesting. We have more exploration development of oil here. That will bring the price down, because even though OPEC has come to this so-called agreement, I don't think that's going to be enough to offset increased demand supply from the U.S.
And it is not going to happen anyway, because OPEC honoring an agreement is like Bill Clinton, reaffirming his marriage vows. You know, this is just a meaningless bunch of nonsense.
OPEC stands for the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Cheaters. That's what I'm
talking about. Yeah, exactly. Well, and that fits in with the Bill Clinton theme. So,
exactly.
We have no chance of OPEC, and they want the United States to join OPEC. Did you see that one of the member states? Yes. Like, come on, you guys. You like ruined us as a country 30 years ago in the second oil embargo. It was 38 years ago. And now you want us to join with you and embrace your goals? No, I mean, come on. I don't think so. Well, this is going to be interesting. What we're two factors we're not considering here is potential wars. We've got like geopolitical frictions. I don't really believe it's going to happen with the U.S. and China. This is Trump's posturing.
It's going to get
Twitter.
Very tense, though. What's already happened over the South China Sea?
Yeah, that's true.
Our drone, and they gave it back, and all these talks.
They're just testing him.
They are testing him,
and I think he came through well. He told them to stick it. We don't care about it. And then they gave it back. So they know that, I'd love to see him go to a summit or something in China and then not roll out the red carpet and not come out with pull the stairs up to his plane and see his reaction, as opposed to Obama, who slinks out
the
back door of the plane in the belly. Forget it. Trump would never do that. He'd just say, turn this baby around. We're going home. And they'd say, no, don't leave. Don't. And he said, goodbye. And he would be at the edge of the runway and they'd be begging him to stay. Know that. I mean,
It's going to be a completely different negotiation. Hopefully, I mean, if he can actually pull off what he's talked about, get better trade deals with China, with Mexico, with Japan, with Europe. I mean, this could be fantastic for us and for world economic growth. And one specific thing I think he might do is he may have a specific US-UK deal.
Yeah.
They're going to come out of Europe. We might have a bilateral agreement that would really threaten Europe, but it could really be good for us and the UK.
I totally agree with you there. It makes complete sense because he was a huge booster of Brexit. I mean, he was over there campaigning for it, and it was it was a foreshadowing of his election.
Exactly. So let's look at 2017. So some of the specific things going to happen is there going to be some major elections in France.
Yeah.
Germany.
Yes.
And those two alone, I'm not sure she's going to win, but Marine Le Pen, who's the head of the National Front Party in France.
Well, she's looking pretty good.
Very close.
She's looking damn good.
And if that were to happen, the next thing is Frexit.
Oh, and that's the end of the EU.
That's the end of the EU, correct. And then on top, they have Germany, where Angela Merkel's in real trouble because of all this recent bombing. And
yeah, that's the other wild card in this.
It's been a disaster for them. So there's a big right-wing movement in Germany. Now, it may not win, but it's going to be much stronger. And we've already seen this in Hungary and Austria and Denmark and Holland and all these places. A big move to the right.
They're fed up. Yeah, they want their continent back. They see these hordes of refugees, in quotes, in big scare quotes, and they're scared to death because they're a destabilizing influence. And, you know, there's a lot of blame to go around.
The other part of it is a resentment against Brussels.
Yes.
And a resentment against bureaucracy. It's very similar to what happened in the U.S. Trump was an anti-Washington, anti-bureaucratic vote, as well as against refugees from South America and Syria and other places like that. It's very similar in Europe. And that's one of the things that drove Brexit as well, was we want to set our own policies. We don't want these unelected bureaucrats in Brussels telling us the size of our screwdrivers or something.
Well, I think you could sum the trend up as deglobalization to some extent, but it's not like we're going to go back to like every country being producing everything it needs, et cetera.
Yes.
I think
you'll have trade, but on different terms than we've had in the past. You
know? Well,
and Brexit may not turn out so badly for Britain. They may adapt and do a lot better than people think. Well,
did you see the EU standards for hydration products, which otherwise some might call bottled water? It was like 21 pages of nonsense, of drivel. Right. And, you know,
people are sick of it.
Yeah.
So if you have Frexit,
That
could be the end of the end. So who knows what comes next? We bring back all their currencies. Greece goes under because there's nobody to support it anymore. And that would be another concern is what's going to happen in the southern part of Europe. Greece, Italy, which is really in bad shape, Spain, Portugal, all those those countries. So we'll have to see. But that's a major thing. And the people who are subsidizing don't want to do it anymore.
Oh, hey, and there's one other trend for real estate. Just wanted to bring up. Jason Hartman brought it up to me. And that is elimination of Dodd-Frank is extremely bullish for real estate. Because hard money lending, private equity lending for real estate, it's all been curtailed and virtually eliminated under Dodd-Frank because you can't do hard money loans. You can't do owner financing under Dodd-Frank. You've got all these idiotic restrictions that make no sense. They won't stop another.
The real estate market, it's already doing pretty well, but you get it moving even more because of that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of jobs, and that creates a lot of wealth.
Yes.
And all of what we're talking about, Kerry, creates what John Maynard Keynes used to call the animal spirits.
Yes.
And that is infectious, right? And when people feel better, I mean, with the stock market up to 20,000 the Dow, even though you don't sell your stocks, you feel better. It creates what's called the positive wealth effect. And if real estate is going up and if people's getting more jobs, and all these things with the dollar strong, all this creates in itself a psychological atmosphere where people want to spend, they want to invest, grow, expand, and all that. So that's where you get to that 5% GDP growth if all this works.
Yep. Well, that might be a bit optimistic, and maybe it'll happen for a quarter or two. You never know. And then again, the American economy has been hamstrung horribly since the Great Depression. They did back off on a lot of these regulations during during the 50s, they repealed a whole bunch, but we never really got to that optimal level of government withdrawal from the economy after
expanding dramatically. Yeah. Certainly under Obama.
Yes.
I mean, we've had massive amount of regulation. I mean, in his first 2 years,
oh God,
he had Obamacare and Dodd-Frank. And after that, he lost Congress, so he wasn't able to do anything more. But he did a lot through executive order.
And deficits.
Repealed on the day right after the inauguration. Apparently, I heard Trump's got 2,000 executive orders he's going to repeal as he gets back to the office.
Hey, and
imagine.
And have you heard his stated goals with regulations? That they're going through every department and every regulation that makes no sense, that has no purpose, they're going to repeal it.
Right.
And it's not that hard to repeal it. I think you got to give 90 days notice in the congressional record. And all you got to do is saying, we hereby withdraw the following regulations, subject to fair comment, and list them. And that's all you got to do. I don't even think you have to say why you're withdrawing them. And then they're gone, Jordan. I mean,
right.
They can go to court and stop. Economy. Yeah.
I mean, the Dodd-Frank, people are underestimating the impact of that. If you can get lending going, it's been so hard to get loans, both for individuals and for small businesses. If you can free that up, that could be very, very positive. If you can free Fannie and Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae.
Let's get rid of them.
Government wards.
Yeah.
You can get them in the free market. That's going to help the housing market.
Let's get rid of them. Let's get rid of Fannie and Freddie. They've outlived their usefulness, and we need to really dump them. Let's face it. I mean,
all these are free market things that now have a chance. And it's not only the Congress and the president, but he's going to appoint a fifth Supreme Court justice, who will be conservative, that will agree to a lot of these things as well. So it's a trifecta. We have not had a trifecta like that in a long, long time.
Oh, we never have. I mean, we've been going down the rabbit hole of increased regulation, increased government insertion and domination of the economy and taxes. I mean, you name it, you know, everything. And it's been hurting the country, the economy, you know, since you and I have been little kids here.
Right.
I mean.
So we'll see. Maybe I'm too optimistic, but that's where I'm at right now, is I think we've got tremendous opportunity. Even if half of what he talks about happens, if we cut the taxes, if we cut the regulations, if we get the infrastructure program going.
Don't forget, he's got
these things.
He's got one thing going for him here. He's got Newt Gingrich kind of quarterbacking his legislative initiative here. And if it's one guy who knows how to get stuff through Congress, it's Gingrich, you know?
Right, right.
So,
well, both sides really want, they've been frustrated on the House and Senate side, McConnell and Ryan.
Ugh.
They've had all kinds of plans and nothing was going to happen under Obama. Nothing.
Yeah.
Tax reform.
Oh, they have been ineffective people, too, you know?
But now this is their dream come true, so they're not going to blow it.
Well, you know, you did have McConnell. All of a sudden, he lets Obama do whatever he wants to do, and then now he's worried about the deficit, you know? It was really touching.
In theory, we'll see, but if everything we've been talking about, Kerry, happens, and you get 5% economic growth, growth solves all kinds of problems, and it creates more revenue for the government, and all this infrastructure creates a lot of jobs and creates efficiency and kind of productivity, and that could, I mean, they talk about it paying for itself. Maybe it's not possible, but it's possible that economic growth would pay for itself. When you get lower tax rates, you create more revenue. I mean, we've seen this time after time.
It always works. It's not even subject to any meaningful debate. When you raise taxes, it's actually deflationary. When you cut taxes, it's inflationary because more money comes into the government. You know, there was a guy, by the way, both New Yorkers. I don't live there anymore, but I'll always be a New Yorker. There's a guy who's got a plan. He wants to take LaGuardia and actually take Rikers Island, which is like the world's largest penal colony right now.
Yes.
Knock out the prisons, get rid of it, and merge the two and make a huge airport. You know, right now LaGuardia is, they're building a new airport there. It's a total nightmare if you have to leave from there. You might have to walk from the highway like 3 miles because of the traffic. There's no parking. There's no drop-offs. There's nothing. And hook up Metro North to it because the railroad's right behind it and make like 4 more runways and magnificent airport. It would only cost like $10 trillion. But man, Like, what happened?
People are thinking big.
Yeah, whatever happened to the U.S. thinking big? This is a perfect Trumpian project.
Right.
I mean, we'll all be dead by the time it gets done. But just think about it. And we got too many prisoners anyway. Let's give them all jobs and have
this
them start building
around
it.
The country.
Right?
This is something will be happening around the country. They're talking about putting high-speed rail in Texas, to have Austin, Texas, and Dallas all connected, and high-speed rail between Los Angeles and Las Vegas and San Francisco.
You were in China. You were in China.
Right.
180 miles an hour, man. You're going there from the airport to downtown Shanghai, man. Like, it's nothing.
Right.
So it's time to think big.
It is. And all these things, I think you're right. We've been in a deflationary environment for a while. Being in an inflationary environment, if you're positioned right, could be very, very positive. Yeah.
No bonds. Inflation. Get out of the bonds and just let the Fed buy them and don't think about it, right?
Exactly. Or bond surrogates, utilities,
yeah,
real estate investment trusts, master limited partnerships, all the things that have been doing so well mm-hmm. for the bond rally. We've had a bond rally for 30 years, basically.
Sure.
And that is over.
Sure.
So I agree with you completely. I mean, I'll tell you one thing I'm doing. Mm-hmm. For income, and yeah. I mentioned this before, these commercial mortgage bridge loans, because that's a short-term vehicle, 1 year, 1 to 2 years, 6 to 8% yields, mm-hmm. and you get your money back in a year. And if interest rates have gone up, you get to reinvest at higher rates without having your principal be lost, as it will be in bonds and bond surrogates. Website for that, commercialmortgagebridgeloans.com. I know that's been popular with your listeners, because they're lending the money short-term to projects that can't get funded otherwise. And you're brilliant. Very secured because the maximum loan to value is 65%.
Yeah.
So that's an alternative for people who need income.
And they're going to get more secure under the current Trumpian environment. You're in there short term, so the risk is very low. Your loan to value is very favorable, so you're just not going to get fried on them. Yeah, it's brilliant, and it's only going to get better. But I do think over time we have to return to a more normalized interest rate environment, which means 5%, because these pension plans are choking. Every...
It was funny. I don't know if you saw recently, Kerry, in California, they lowered their assumptions on their CalPERS, the big pension there, from 7.5% to 7%.
Wow. Okay.
And that's causing enormous stress. Because all of the local municipalities are going to have to raise taxes to make up for the difference. Because when you assume less, the money's got to come from somewhere, and it comes from municipalities. So now all these municipalities want to pull out of the CalPERS system because they're lowering their assumption from 7.5% to 7%. I don't think they've earned 7% in a long time.
Yeah, well, a couple of the stock market, though. Don't forget the stock market. There's been years. But in any event, they're delusional. This is what happens when government provides things that they shouldn't be doing. You wind up with CalPERS. Anyway, it's time for us to part, but best wishes for the coming year.
And I'm always glad to get emails from your listeners. I love getting them. MoneyAnswers.com is my website.
MoneyAnswers.com. Any emails you want to send to us, kl@carrylutz.com, financialsurvivalnetwork.com, and sign up for the newsletter. Jordan, best wishes. We'll talk to you in 2017. Be well, my friend.
Be well to you. It's going to be a very exciting year, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.